Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On Monday, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced he had collected enough signatures for his presidential bid to qualify to appear on North Carolina's ballot in November. His name will likely join that of President Joe Biden and Donald Trump, along with a Libertarian and perhaps candidates from other third parties. Nationally, voters seem disenchanted with both the choices presented by the two major political parties. Pundits believe they are looking for alternatives and would vote for one of those candidates if they find their campaign proposals attractive. And that worries the frontrunners on both the Democratic and Republican tickets. Under our system, third-party candidates act as spoilers, siphoning off votes from one major candidate or the other, skewing the results and perhaps giving voters a result they didn't really want. If you cannot win, and third-party candidates cannot, why run? What does the RFK Jr. candidacy, the rise of the No Labels movement, and increased interest in other less-than-mainstream candidates say about our political climate, and who might gain or lose from voters flocking to a third-party candidate? A closer look at that this hour with help from Bernard Thomas. He is associate professor at Valdosta State University and author of The Demise and Rebirth of American Third Parties. Welcome back to the program. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
He will help us navigate the national picture, and Colin Campbell is back with us. Colin is the Capitol Bureau Chief at WUNC in Chapel Hill, so he will help us through the North Carolina perspective on all this. Thank you for joining us again, Colin.
Great to be here, Mike.
Good morning. So, Bernard, you are an expert in third political parties in America. We've done more than a few programs on the idea of third parties and how they relate to our Constitution and more. But for the sake of those who perhaps missed those programs, explain why, under the system designed by the founders in the Constitution, why third parties don't win.
Well, they don't win in America. There's a couple of different reasons. One of them is the way that we run elections, where it's a winner-take-all system. So whoever gets the most votes wins. So it's really hard as compared to like proportional representation, like places like Denmark, where if you win a percentage of votes, you wind up with percentage of seats. This is one of the reasons, and probably the other big reason why third parties do so badly is because it is ungodly expensive to run campaigns in the United States. There is effectively no public funding, and a lot of the steps that other countries take, like let's say Canada, to make it cheaper for smaller parties to run simply don't exist here. So it really has led to a system that is absolutely dominated by the Democratic and Republican parties.
Yeah, the Canadian system is parliamentary, and in parliamentary systems, that seems to lend itself better to more than two political parties. Here we have this presidential system, and I've actually forgotten why that lends itself better to two candidates or two parties. But then there is this fact that we have these dominant parties that have campaign infrastructure and lots of money behind them, etc. Is that which is the bigger problem, the constitutional construction or the fact that the whole thing has been geared for centuries now to support two major parties, Bernard?
Well, I mean, I would fall more on the latter side. I'm not convinced that the presidency is a critical reason why we don't have more parties. But again, it's the if you have a system where only one candidate wins each district, then you wind up in a situation where if you're smaller, if you have a decent amount of support, you simply can't win those seats. But again, if we want to look at it in terms of how we're different from Canada, it's or the UK, let's say, or even Australia, it's that if you look at third party candidates, let's say at the congressional level, It takes a good million, $2 million to win a seat. They often raise $2,000, $3,000. Even the libertarians, you would think the libertarians of all people could raise money, but they actually can't. And so it's a system that winds up, with so many resources, including party infrastructure. It is really quite a mountain to climb if you're trying to win as a third party candidate.
Given our political climate today, which is extremely divided, and the dissatisfaction that so many people feel about the front runners on both the Democratic and Republican ticket, is the appetite for another choice, a third party candidate, greater today than you've seen it in recent years? And if so, should that concern us?
The appetite for third party candidates has been rising gradually since the 1960s, the late 1960s. Third parties were as good as dead in the 1940s, 1950s, early 1960s. But so post civil rights movement, you started seeing like libertarians, other parties emerging and actually starting to at least exist, I guess is the best way to put it, and have been gaining kind of a rise. There's been part of it is just how polarized American politics is. This seems to be the major thing driving it is there's so much of a separation between the Democratic and Republican Party that didn't exist a few decades ago, that now you also have people more in the moderate realm winding up saying, okay, I'm really dissatisfied with this, and I at least think about possibly voting for a third party candidate.
And in an interview that you did with Politico, I'm not exactly sure, I think it was 2024, I think it was this year, you
It was
said,
this
quote,
year.
"There is a huge opening for third parties this time around." Does that mean that there will be more third parties, or does it simply mean that the political atmosphere is ripe for them to pick voters from Joe Biden and Donald Trump?
The atmosphere is ripe, but they also really have to develop strategies that fit with being third party candidates. And so the fact that it's ripe is not going to be enough in order to really push large numbers of voters over, but to these parties. But what you definitely see is a situation that you didn't see. If you go back a few decades, third parties were basically considered, well, these are the communists and the Nazis, or they're crazy left and they're crazy right. And now there's much more of a, no, we like at least the idea of voting for third parties, but the specifics start getting to where, these are people who are not used to actually having success come their way. And so they're not really necessarily prepared for it.
But not only are we deeply divided right now, you say that we are calcified. I mean, if you are in the Republican camp, you are likely firmly in that camp. If you're in the Democratic camp, you're likely firmly in the Democratic camp. But then there is this whole amorphous blob in the middle who are independents, who probably lean one way or the other. But they haven't put their they haven't stamped a party label on their foreheads yet. Are those the ones, if a third party candidate emerges with any strength, that will be gravitating toward that person?
Well, I mean, let's talk about the calcified. The voters aren't really switching their party support. There's not like the 19, let's say Ronald Reagan is such a good example of winning by 60% of the vote, and a lot of people who are Democrats shifted over to him. That really doesn't exist right now. The percent vote at the presidential level, the movement is very small. But a lot of what drives that is something called negative partisanship. It's not so much that Republicans love the Republican Party and the Democrats love the Democratic Party. It's that they hate the other party so much that there's no circumstance under which they would vote, Democrats would vote for a Republican or a Republican would vote for a Democrat. And that's kind of what's keeping them there. This is part of what at least theoretically opens the door for third parties to grab them. And it's not necessarily people who we would call independents. I mean, the Republican Party has moved very far in the MAGA direction, and you have what are considered traditional Republicans right now who have been, you know, effectively are in the middle of being kind of abandoned by them.
Yeah, you got those people, and you've got people who are make up this great amorphous blob that I talked about, who don't really identify with one party or the other, or say that they don't, maybe until they get into the voting booth. But given the number of people who have been disenchanted by Donald Trump on the Republican side, the number of people who are not happy with Joe Biden on the Democratic side, and this blob in the middle, is this the year that something could happen?
Well, this is certainly a year where the election could get spoiled, I would say. This is certainly a year where you might wind up having somebody who is the more supported candidate wind up losing, and then not just because of the electoral system, the electoral college. But right now, what we're not seeing is a Perot-like candidate who's really galvanizing people. Yeah. And so it's almost like people are sitting and saying, well, we want something, but it's not in front of us. And you're really seeing the issue, especially on this rising and what looks like falling of these moderate parties or moderate candidates that are trying to tap in, but don't seem to really know how to tap in to that basically anger that exists, this disenchantment that exists by many voters.
So Colin Campbell is here. He's the Capitol Bureau Chief for WUNC in Chapel Hill. And as I said at the top of the program, Colin, on Monday, Robert Kennedy Jr. announced he had collected enough signatures for his name to appear on the ballot in North Carolina in November. He seems to be targeting battleground states. Is it true? Has he gotten enough signatures to be on the ballot? Is it a done deal?
Not yet. The State Board of Elections still has to process all the signatures that they got. And that's a super complicated process where every county has to basically go in and check each name on this petition to determine that person is, in fact, a registered voter in that county. And so that takes a while. Typically, a lot of those signatures get thrown out for one reason or the other in the process. And the State Board of Elections has been pretty reluctant in applying a really high level of scrutiny to these processes up until this point for things like the No Labels Party and the Green Party. So I suspect we're going to see that again with Robert F. Kennedy's party, which he's opting to go essentially form a political party called the We the People Party rather than go as simply as an independent candidate in North Carolina, because the bar is actually lower to create a new political party than it is to be an independent, unlabeled presidential candidate on North Carolina's ballot.
How many signatures do we require to be on a petition to have your name put on the ballot here?
It's a lot. So if you are creating a new political party, the magic number right now is 13,865. It's based on a percentage of votes cast in the last presidential election. Whereas if you wanted to have your name without a party, it's 83,000 signatures. So it's advantageous for Kennedy to essentially create this new We the People Party to get on with a slightly lower threshold.
So I have about a minute left. What's the process? I mean, how did Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Or his people achieve this? 13,000 signatures, that's a lot. That's a lot of walking.
Yeah, you know, a lot of parties, I haven't talked to this group particularly exactly what their methods have been, but in the past, parties have hired a lot of people to go stand on street corners, go to major events, collect signatures. The Constitution Party in its recent bid to get on the ballot was basically about every gun show in the area trying to get people to sign. Like I say, it's really cumbersome because you have to track where the people live, make sure the petition goes to the right county, then get the county boards to sign off, then get the state board to sign off. It involves lawyers, it involves paid staff. It's a lot.
You mentioned the Constitution Party. They're another political party that may be on the ballot or is trying to get on the ballot in North Carolina. When we come back, we'll talk about those other third parties that may be on our ballot. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Bernard Tomas is with us, associate professor, author of The Demise and Rebirth of American Third Parties. I should say he's an associate professor at Valdosta State University. Colin Campbell's also with us. He is Capitol Bureau Chief at WUNC in Chapel Hill. And Colin, you mentioned just before the break, the We the People Party, that's the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Party, the Constitution Party, which is trying to get on the ballot. They are, I think, best described as a highly conservative party, more so even perhaps than some of the MAGA people out there on the Republican side. There's the Green Party, which was certified in 2022 in North Carolina. I assume that once you're certified, you stay that way?
For a time. So the Green Party is okay for this cycle, but the way North Carolina does it is that whether you get to stay for the next cycle depends on how you do in a presidential year. So you've got to get a certain percentage of the vote, I believe, in either the presidential race or the race for governor. And in the past, the Green Party and the Constitution Party have not been able to get over that hurdle. So they've had to start this whole petition process again for the next time around. So we've had elections with the Green Party and Constitution Party before, but the Green Party has now been recertified as of 2022 for this cycle. We'll see if they keep it after this cycle. And then the Constitution Party was on in 2020, but they didn't get quite enough votes to stay on. So they had to go through the petition process again. And that's kind of where we stand entering this year.
So how many third party candidates will either be on the ballot in the presidential or the gubernatorial race here?
Yeah, so what we're looking at now is officially the Green Party is good to go. The Libertarian Party is going to have folks on. The state has recognized the No Labels Party, which is a fairly new national initiative to create some kind of consensus candidate as an alternative to Joe Biden and Donald Trump. We don't know for sure yet that they are, in fact, going to run a candidate. They have the ability to because they are now an officially recognized third party in North Carolina, but they so far have not announced who their candidate's going to be. And they've had some notable folks who say they don't want to be the No Labels candidate. Recently, former Governor Pat McCrory has dropped out of that party. He's no longer part of what they're doing. So we'll see if they have enough steam to have any impact. And then we'll have the Green Party for sure, probably the Constitution Party, probably RFK Jr.'s We the People Party, assuming that he doesn't come up any procedural hurdles. So there's going to be a lot of names on the ballot this year, probably more so than we've seen in recent presidential cycles in North Carolina.
Aside from No Labels, have the other parties put forth a name?
I believe the Libertarians are still in their sort of nomination process. They had a primary with 12 or so different names on the ballot in North Carolina last month. I don't know if the Green Party has a name yet. When I spoke to the Constitution Party folks, their process will be they have a convention once they're officially certified, and at that point, they'll put forward their candidates. They say they want to run candidates up and down the ballot, all the way from president down to school board. So we'll see how many folks that they get in the game if they do, in fact, get certified.
You mentioned former governor, former Charlotte Mayor Pat McCrory. He was one of the leaders in the state of the No Labels Party. And when the party first was announced, we had him and Ben Chavis on this program, the Democrat who went into the No Labels camp. And then when Pat McCrory walked away from No Labels, we asked him to be on the program, and he told us he was taking a break for a while and wouldn't appear. And we asked him to join us this morning as well. Unfortunately, he is on the air opposite this program on Wednesdays, so he couldn't join us. I don't know, we could have simulcast. No third party candidate has ever won a U.S. presidential election, Bernard, but among the most successful was Theodore Roosevelt, who in 1912, ran as a progressive candidate, won 88 electoral votes, nearly 28% of the popular vote. And George Wallace, who ran in 1968 as an American Independent Party candidate, capturing 46 electoral votes and 13.6% of the popular vote. When third parties rack up numbers like those, what is the impact on the two major political party candidates?
Well, let's start with one of the things that those candidates have in common is that they had galvanizing issues. They had issues that they were bringing up that pulled voters towards them. There were, you know, clear themes that they were presenting that were tapping in to the system, and they were setting off a strategy that we often refer to as sting like a bee. And the sting like a bee strategy basically means going in and causing pain, stinging the major parties. And by stinging, that means taking away their voters from them. They don't actually win the third parties, but they do damage. But like any bee, after they sting, they die. And the death comes from the major parties co-opting whatever issues there are in there. One could argue, well, God knows the Republicans didn't go quite the direction that George Wallace did, but they did steal some of his approaches to campaigning, focusing on crime in the city and other terms like this. And the Teddy Roosevelt was a classic case of actually producing some significant changes in American politics. The Republican Party at that time was reactionary. It was very, very far on the right. And Teddy Roosevelt did enough damage. There were enough Republicans that lost, including at the presidential level, that they wound up, you know, having to moderate themselves.
Given the tightness of this race, and it's really close between Donald Trump and President Biden, and the lead has been in Trump's camp for a while, although popularity numbers for the president have been rising. I think he's 2 percentage points ahead of Donald Trump at the moment. In an atmosphere like this, how many votes would a third party candidate have to take from one or the other or both to make a real difference here, to swing the election away from where it might have gone had there just been the two of them?
My answer will be not many. It is remarkable how close presidential elections have been consistently since 2000. We're talking, with maybe one exception in 2008, and even then it wasn't that big of a difference. The Obama won with 7% of the vote, by 7%, which historically is not much at all. Every other election, we're talking about something like 1%, 2% difference, 4% difference. All one candidate would have to do is lose maybe, I'm just going to go with Joe Biden. If he loses enough votes in swing states like probably North Carolina, you know, certainly, let's say Michigan, maybe Pennsylvania, a small percentage of votes, this is enough to flip the election the other way. And so this is really where the danger for the major parties is nobody knows how many votes or how and where those votes are going to come from.
Colin, we keep being told that North Carolina is in play, that we are a battleground state, that we are a purple state, and yet if you look at the maps, they have been gerrymandered to make us mostly a red state. Is the state in play in your mind? Do politicians, policymakers that you talk to, believe the state is in play?
I think it is the cycle. I mean, for the presidentials, we have not gone blue since Obama won in 2008. But there's a sense among Democrats that if they're able to organize a lot here, this could be the state that sort of blocks Donald Trump for winning again. I mean, it's sort of seen as this firewall, right? Like he lost last time and won North Carolina and it didn't affect the overall outcome. But if he loses North Carolina this time, there's very few pathways by which he can win other states legitimately to get to the magic number of electoral college votes that he needs. So that's why you're seeing a lot of the Biden campaign folks, Biden, vice president, were here just last week in the Raleigh area. They're hiring staff around here. This seems to be a big focus for Democrats to try to see if they can flip the state blue. And I think if it's a big enough wave year for Democrats across the country, that's doable. If it's a good year for Republicans across the country, typically we find ourselves in the red column.
Republicans seem to be running on crime and fear and immigration And the Democrats seem to be running on the demise of Roe v. Wade and the people responsible for that, a.k.a. Republicans, and also on the potential demise of American democracy as we know it. Which are the issues that North Carolina voters seem most concerned about?
So we're seeing a lot of interest among the Republican side in these immigration border security issues. You saw that, a lot of that messaging in the congressional primaries last month on the GOP side. There's less interest, I think, in that issue among Democrats, at least those more on the left, where I think abortion is really the overarching issue. I mean, the stakes are pretty high on the abortion issue for North Carolina next year. If the Democrats elected governor and they break the Republican supermajority in the state legislature by winning a few more seats, then that pretty much keeps us with the status quo. If Republicans win the governor's office, or they keep their supermajorities in the legislature and still there's a Democratic governor, they can enact more strict restrictions on abortion than the law that was passed last year with a 12-week ban. And so that's something Democrats are very worried about.
And Phil Berger says he's done with changing any abortion laws. Do you believe him?
I think I believe him for right now. You know, they're coming back into session in a few weeks, and he says that they're not going to do anything more with abortion at this stage during this year. But I think no one seems to have closed off the door for additional restrictions next year, because we will have new members in the legislature. Some folks who are further to the right, there'll probably be a push to do more once we get into 2025.
Bernard, it's hard to talk about numbers on the radio, but let's talk about numbers on the radio here. According to a Gallup poll taken last October, the number of voters supporting the idea of a third national political party had risen to 63%. That's a 7-point increase since 2003. 70% of independents said that they were ready for a third choice. 58% of Republicans and 46% of Democrats expressed support for third parties. Clearly, there's an appetite for this. Given the disarray of the MAGA Republican side of that party, could a third party come along in the very near future, right now, for instance, and become one of the big two parties if it catered to moderates?
Well, first of all, let's emphasize what you're saying. If you go back even farther, the appetite, as you put it, for third parties has been rising steadily since easily the 1960s, the 1950s. There's large percentages of Americans who, at least theoretically, wish that we had more political parties in the American system. This would be, I would look at this from a historical perspective. Nobody seems to be focusing on this because they're focusing more on RFK. But what you're having with the Republican Party is a shift very much to the MAGA direction, very much away from traditional conservatives, which is in fact opening a door for third parties that I have not seen, we have not seen in many decades. That now, whether or not that could translate into, let's say, the Libertarians actually winning and becoming a major party, maybe not. But what you do have is a situation where they could, you know, actually have an impact that we haven't seen in a long time.
But we used to have conservative Democrats and progressive Republicans. I'm sure they're still there. They may not think of themselves or call themselves that, but they are those people in the vast middle and the disgruntled members of both parties. If some third party came along and molded itself into that image and likeness, couldn't they become the second of, wouldn't one of those other parties disappear and they could become one of the two?
Well, I mean, the more likely, if we go back to the whole, this thing like a bee framework, the more likely thing, what we've seen in American politics, is if you hit the Republican Party hard enough, that's a point where the Republicans would have to actually respond. They're moving farther and farther to the right. This started before, long before Trump came along. This shift towards the right is driving, being driven more like internal factors, including, and the fact that they have to keep running for primaries. They don't consider the general election the main thing to worry about. And so I would imagine, well, you know, the third party's role is, it would be great if we could actually have, let's say, four parties. but it's unlikely to occur. Presidential
races are decided by the electoral vote, and you have to snag, a candidate has to snag 270 out of 538 electoral votes in order to win the presidency. If we held elections strictly on the basis of the popular vote, would it be easier or more difficult for third-party candidates to win, Bernard?
Well, I would argue that it is probably not as big. The Electoral College is probably not as big of a factor as people usually argue, because both of these are kind of insurmountable requirements to jump. It's very hard when you don't have the kind of resources that the Democratic and Republican Party have to actually win a majority. Again, your example was a great one. Teddy Roosevelt came about as close as we've ever seen to a third party candidate actually winning, and even Teddy couldn't quite pull it off, despite how amazingly popular he was. And that was a different time.
Governor, since Pat McCrory is not on the program today, Colin, despite our invitation, he was involved, as we have said, in the No Labels party movement. He led the push in North Carolina to create support for it here, and then walked away and hasn't said why. Do you know why?
I don't have a sense. You know, like you mentioned, he hasn't really explained his reasoning. His departure comes as they're trying to decide, do they move forward with a candidacy? And they've said all along, we're not going to put forth a candidate if we don't think it's actually viable for them to win. I think there's a decent chance Pat McCrory looked at the numbers as we got further and further into the election process and realized, you know what, no matter who they put forward, how popular that well-known that person is, the likelihood that they can actually win is pretty darn slim.
Well, when he and Ben Chavis were on this program as leaders of the state No Labels party, they both said they would shut down their efforts if polling showed Joe Biden ahead of Donald Trump. Biden has pretty much been neck and neck with Donald Trump all this, ever since that moment in time. Do we know if they have changed? Because they're looking for candidates. Do we know if they've changed their mind about that? Or are they just assuming that Donald Trump is ahead of Joe Biden and will be in November?
You know, I'm not sure what their thoughts are on the polling, but I think what we have seen is that they've had a lot of high-profile candidates, people like West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin and others, that they wanted to recruit as their candidate for president and vice president, and those folks have pretty uniformly been turning them down. So to the extent they can get anybody, the likelihood that they get a name that any of us have heard of seems like it's increasingly slim, and I think that's got to factor into their thinking.
When we come back, I want to get Bernard Thomas's take on what he thinks the No Labels Party is truly trying to accomplish. And then we'll talk about some of the third-party candidates with the names that you would recognize in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Colin Campbell, Capitol Bureau Chief from WUNC in Chapel Hill, and also Bernard Thomas, who is an associate professor at Valdosta State University and an expert in third parties in the United States down through history. He's also the author of The Demise and Rebirth of American Third Parties. Nationally, Bernard, what do you think the No Labels Party is trying to accomplish here? Have they connected? You know, they don't have a candidate yet, so have they connected in any real way with voters? I mean, do voters like the idea of what they stand for, whatever that is, or do they just kind of shrug it off?
Well, let's start with, I mean, I'm not sure I can read their minds on what their strategy is. I can tell, or what their purpose is. I can tell you that the moderate groups, so we're not talking about Democrats now, but moderates like the Third Way think tank and Lincoln Project as well, think that it's a front to try to get Donald Trump victory. Their criticisms have been detailed and very pointed. And of course, this group is claiming that No Labels is claiming, no, we're going to win because so many people are upset. But if you look at their approach, this is not a particularly good strategy if you're actually attempting to run as a third party, because their argument seems to be nobody likes the major candidate, so we can find somebody better, as opposed to actually having a galvanizing theme, some issue. They're more focused on, hey, can we find somebody popular to put on the top of the ticket? Somehow they seem to think, as long as we find someone popular, you know, hey, Nikki Haley, you want to come join us? No. You know, Joe Manchin, do you want to join us? No. It's not something that historically has ever worked for third parties. And so it's not surprising me that they're struggling this much right now. You could kind of see this coming a while before.
And if you talk about the two candidates you just talked about, if Republicans said no to Nikki Haley, and if Republican, who's the other one you said?
Joe Manchin, they love Joe Manchin.
And Democrats don't particularly care for Joe Manchin. I'm not sure how Republicans feel about them. They're not exactly reaching out to people who I think could garner enough support to be successful. Colin, North Carolina is this battleground state, we are told this year, may help decide the election. It must be true because both the president and the vice president have been here several times. They were here together last week in Raleigh. I think Vice President Harris is coming back to the state tomorrow. Is this normal behavior in North Carolina for candidates to come here quite so often in advance of the election?
We've seen it a lot the last few cycles, maybe not to this degree. I mean, we've seen a lot of the presidential candidates the last couple cycles. This year, the Democrats really seem to be pushing hard. And what's interesting to me is that they seem to be pushing harder than the Republicans. I think the last time Donald Trump was in the state was for a rally in Greensboro right before the primary. But we have not seen nearly as much of him as we've seen of Joe Biden and his people.
Why do you think that is?
I think Republicans are looking at other states that are more of a must-win for them, places that Donald Trump carried in 2016 that he lost in 2020. And so they're not necessarily pushing as hard here, whereas I think Democrats think if they can win here, they can really block off all the other opportunities that Trump has to get the right number of delegates in the Electoral College.
Well, Donald Trump, as you well know, plucked Michael Whatley, who was the head of the North Carolina Republican Party, to be the co-chair of the National Republican Party, along with his daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, who's a former North Carolinian as well. Does he expect these choices to pay dividends with North Carolina voters, or were these moves strictly what he thought he needed to do in order to install loyalists at the top of the party?
I think it's probably more the latter, that he wants loyalists and obviously someone within his family like Laura Trump, who is an NC State graduate, grew up in Wilmington, and Michael Whatley, who's from Gastonia and has led the Republican Party at the state level. These are folks that he knows he can count on as being in his corner and supporting how he wants to see the Republican National Committee run. I think for the individual voters, unless you're a loyal Republican, a loyal Trump supporter, you probably don't know much about either of these two figures. They're not necessarily that well known outside of political circles, unless you're a very loyal Republican, in which case you're probably already a fervent Trump supporter. So I don't know that that necessarily scores him any points the way, say, picking a vice presidential candidate from a particular state would.
There are these things called coattails, and we have a gubernatorial race in the state which kind of mirrors the presidential race in many ways. Josh Stein is a more conventional candidate, as is Joe Biden. And then you have the lieutenant governor, who is a firebrand and a Trumper. Are the leaders of either party worried, Colin, about the impact a third-party presidential candidate may have on the coattails that either Donald Trump or Joe Biden would provide these gubernatorial candidates?
I think that is a big concern for both parties, because you look at sort of where they draw from. We've got the Green Party on the ballot. They typically pull from the most liberal Democrats who are unhappy with the party not being far enough to the left to their liking. And we saw the hurdles put up by the Democrats on the State Board of Elections to the Green Party were such that You even had state and national Democratic Party groups involved in a lawsuit over whether the Green Party could get on the ballot a couple years ago. Just this week, a judge ruled that the Democratic Party actually has to pay some of the legal fees that the Green Party incurred to go through that whole battle to get on the ballot. So obviously that's a concern for them. I suspect the Democrats are more happy to see the Constitution Party come along because there's a certain symmetry in that, that the Constitution Party is going to pull conservative Republicans who feel like the Republican Party maybe isn't far enough to the right to their liking, and we're looking for that alternative. And then sort of Libertarian Party will pull a little bit from both. I think No Labels may pull a little bit from both. There's a sense that RFK Jr.'s candidacy may pull more from Democrats. So I think you're going to see a lot of reluctance and some hurdles put up for his party to get on the ballot in North Carolina because Democrats do hold a majority on the state board of elections. So we're going to see a lot of fighting, a lot of legal wrangling around this because there is a fear that, you know, even though these parties pull a very small percentage of the votes in a state like North Carolina, where it's typically really close, that can have a difference. I mean, I look at 2020 when you had a state Supreme Court race that was decided by just 500 votes. And then you had a Constitution Party candidate for governor who, as I'm looking at the numbers, only got 0.38%, which seems like virtually nothing, but that's 20,000 votes. And if the race is decided by a really small margin, 20,000 votes can make a big difference.
So, Bernard, this two-party system that we have, which has evolved over time, has a stranglehold on our politics. Some say the system and the corrosive influence of big money in politics results in our consistently having to vote for the, quote, lesser of two evils, end quote. Is that true? Or is the real problem the primary system, which forces every candidate to tack to the extremes of their party, gerrymandering of voting districts, which has disadvantaged one party over the other, Citizens United, which has injected big corporate dollars into campaigns, etc.? Which is the bigger problem that make us feel like we're voting for the lesser of two evils?
I would say it's the resources. The resources are the critical difference between how politics works between the U.S. and other countries where they have the single member districts. And so the other things that you've mentioned have real impact on American politics, especially, you know, gerrymandering is a good example of it. The primary elections are definitely a factor that are part of what's pushing the Republican Party so far to the right, that the candidates are more concerned about winning the nomination than actually winning the general election, which they're assuming in highly polarized districts. But yeah, I mean, this is one of those factors. The third parties are going to need to figure out strategies for getting around the financial issues that they face, that they need to find. What third parties historically have always done is go at this, not just new themes, but different approaches to campaigning as a way of circumventing the huge amount of power that the Democratic and Republican parties have. And again, this is not something we're seeing right now by the third parties.
So let's talk about the bigger names who are running as third party candidates, if there are such things. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., clearly a big name in politics because he comes from the family that most closely resembles American political royalty, the Kennedy family, but he has espoused views that are the polar opposite of what Robert Kennedy would have said, or Ted Kennedy, or John F. Kennedy, for that matter, and members of his family have distanced themselves and are supporting Joe Biden for president. What should voters take from that?
Well, I think the problem for RFK, closely related to what you're saying, is that this is a very confusing issue stands, very confusing themes that he's presenting, which makes it hard for me to see how he's going to pull in any particular the group that's upset right now in American politics. On the one hand, he's telling voters effectively that you can't trust scientists with vaccines, but on the other hand, you really should trust the scientists on climate change, which is a giant issue. You know, he's pro reproductive rights. On the other hand, he's very pro Israel and during the Gaza crisis. Third parties have to have very consistent themes. It has to be really clear cut what they're presenting, and that clarity is lacking. And so it really is hard to imagine how he's going to be able to sustain the kind of support that he seems to be showing now in the long run. This is a real serious problem for him.
Kennedy has argued that Joe Biden is the bigger threat to democracy, not Donald Trump, because of his push for social media companies to monitor the platforms and how they disseminate medical information. Given that Donald Trump is speaking more and more every day like an authoritarian, that he sidles up to other authoritarian leaders and expresses his admiration for their strongman tendencies and has said he wants to be a dictator on day one, tried to thwart the outcome of the last presidential election, and faces 91 criminal charges. Does a comment like that from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. that Joe Biden is the greater threat to democracy make him sound delusional?
Well, it is delusional. I mean, this is a if you ask political scientists who are experts on democracy, you know, these are the same people, if you go back 20 years, had the usual statement was the U.S., the most stable democracy in the world, now are looking at the circumstances and saying, my God, we're in serious trouble. The idea that Joe Biden is a greater threat, this is much more of, you know, kind of right-wing propaganda. Yeah. But again, it comes back to this same issue. I'm not sure how he's going to maintain the support among Democrats with that kind of a line of attack.
Have you heard, Colin, anybody in the state talking about RFK Jr. being on the ballot here? Have you heard politicians or voters talk about anything positive or negative about it?
You know, you really haven't heard much. You know, his campaign has obviously been here collecting signatures, but, you know, getting people to sign your petition to create a new political party or to get on the ballot is a whole different ballgame from convincing people to actually vote for you and use their one vote that they get in the presidential race on your candidate.
In December, a Quinnipiac poll found Kennedy getting 40% of the 18 to 34 vote compared to 11% of the 65 plus vote, leading both Trump and Biden under registered voters 45 and under by 1%. And he's particularly popular, I'm told, with young men nationally. What have you heard within North Carolina?
I imagine we have similar characteristics here, but like I say, I just haven't heard a whole lot of action. And some of that is the issues that Bernard mentioned. I mean, it's sort of an odd mishmash of policy stances that he has. And maybe there's some demographics with which that resonates, but it's not a huge swath of the population. The people who are mostly dissatisfied with Biden want someone further to the left. They might go towards the Green Party. Folks who are dissatisfied with Trump, some of them are further to the right, or they just don't like the style and baggage that Donald Trump brings with his legal issues. They might go to the Constitution Party or the Libertarian Party. It's hard to see how Kennedy gets that many folks in this corner.
The median age of the electorate is far younger than the presidential candidates, and that's been one point of dissatisfaction with both Trump, who's approaching Joe Biden's age, and Joe Biden is old, and he says he's old, and then you have Robert F. Kennedy Jr., ain't exactly a spring chicken either. Another third-party candidate is also in that basket of 70-year-olds, Cornel West. He announced as the People's Party candidate and then said he would seek the Green Party's nomination. Now he's running as an independent, and I think recently he formed the Justice for All Party. What's going on there, Bernard? he keeps changing parties.
I think there was one of the happiest moments for the Biden campaign was when Cornel West decided that he wasn't going to run with the Greens. It was he gave up. It seemed like the Greens they have to follow their own rules by law, and so they put the red carpet in front of him, but he had to actually walk the carpet. He had to go through a process going from, you know, and going from state to state to gain support, and he decided this wasn't worth his time. But actually, they were handing him an infrastructure to run with. And so it was one of the strangest moves I've seen. You could see that the Greens were completely caught off guard by this.
I have 1 minute left, and I have two questions. Because third-party candidates cannot win, some say that voters are essentially throwing their votes away when they vote for that third-party candidate and skewing the election in a direction that they may not like. So what would you say to disgruntled voters who would be tempted to vote third-party? Very quickly.
It is a protest vote. It is a way of sending message. When you're voting, you're not just trying to get an outcome of who wins. You're also sending a message to the political system. And that's effectively what you're doing.
And if by some wild shot, a third party candidate should win the presidency, could that person govern? Could they work with Congress?
Well, historically, if we look at it, at some states where independents won, often no. Probably that would be a difficult task to follow in today's politics.
Of course, it seems that nobody can work with Congress as it is presently constituted. We should talk about congressional elections next, I suppose. Bernard Thomas, author of The Demise and Rebirth of American Third Parties, and Colin Campbell, Capitol Bureau Chief at WUNC. Thank you both for the hour.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.